special edition of the Everyday Drinkers Audio Podcast. I'm your host, Derek Schulmer, and today we're going to be sitting down and talking with Brave Spirits. Brave Spirits is a smaller startup company located in the Pennsylvania region, and they're going to be talking to us about a lot of the different things that they've been trying to accomplish, what they have accomplished, their ideas, and their vision is unique in that they're attempting to bring alcohol, but also donate money back to the men and women in the armed forces, to police departments, to fire departments, running charities, and basically fundraisers to try and bring awareness to military and what other people in uniform have done for us in our country. Everything they make is 100% American made. They specialize. They have gin, they have a vodka, a whiskey, and a rum. And so we're going to sit down for about 45 minutes to talk to them and see what they're all about. Hope you guys enjoy the show, and here we go. Today we're going to be here with Brave Spirits, and we wanted to talk about, I'll let you guys introduce yourself and tell us what you do, and just a little, you know, a one-minute background of what the company did, and we can get into some questions and answers and such. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right.
Sounds
great. And do you want to start, Powell?
Sure. Powell Arms, one of the founders and owners of Brave Spirits here in Narberth, PA.
I'm Jennifer Fox. I'm also a founder of Brave Spirits, and I am a director of the Brave Spirits Foundation.
And now, how many founders are there?
There's three of us because we're also have David Fox, who is my husband, who's also the mastermind and founder of Brave Spirits.
Ah, cool. So what is it? How did you guys kind of get started? Like, what was the inspiration?
Well, we got started, I guess the idea came about in 2005 when the Fox family and my family were on vacation together in Hawaii. We went with our children, who were at the time all under the age of 10, and I think they and the parents needed a break flying out from Philadelphia to Hawaii. So we'd stopped on the way at the Marine Memorial Club in San Francisco for a quick overnight. And you walk through that place, which is filled with Marine Corps history, and you can't help but be, it's palpable, the patriotism and the call to duty
right
from those folks. And when we were in Hawaii, David and I were on an 8-hour hike together, just the two of us. And after the first 30 minutes, we talked about the usual things that two guys talk about, you know, sports and cars.
Right.
And we had 7.5 hours to fill. And at the end of that next 7.5 hours, the idea for Brave Spirits was pretty well put together. You know, part of it was Dave's experience in the spirits industry working with Diageo and Brown and Foreman. Certainly the background of the call to duty that we'd seen in San Francisco. And you know, just the idea that, hey, let's create a product for a group as opposed to what sometimes happens. Let's create a product and then try and find the market for it.
Right.
So, you know, we looked at, you know, and literally at the end of those 8 hours, we had the idea for the company. Let's find a way to say thank you to men and women that put themselves in harm's way every day. If we think about it, we can all go out and buy a beer with the Phillies logo on it or the Red Sox logo on it, all of which are sort of fun things, but we could not think of any products that every day said thank you for putting your life on the line. Lo and behold, when we came back to civilization, you know, did a little research and we thought, oh, you know, it's surely somebody else has done this, but boy, we had a great idea for 8 hours, and nobody had. And Jen, you know, took it to the next level and said, well, you know, to really say thank you, let's do it financially as well. And in 2007, Dave started working on the effort full time. And when you know, put the business plan together, the numbers proved out that you could donate $2 from every bottle on a bottle with a shelf price of $20 and still create a sustainable company. But you know, I think more importantly, create a sustainable source of revenue for charities that support military, fire, and police personnel with a great product. And Jen can certainly touch on, you know, what we've been able to accomplish in our first year with the charitable efforts of the Brave Spirits Foundation.
And if you, I noticed if you go to bravespirits.com, it has the a rolling number at the top that it always the now it's right now it's just 47,000 I believe 47,600 and some change. Now that's for donations, right?
Well, I think when you look at what we've been able to do with the foundation, it's actually greater than the ticker amount.
Oh, okay.
We've been able to donate in many, many different ways. The first way is through the $2 per bottle donation, so that anyone who purchases a bottle of Brave Spirits, $2 automatically is put into the foundation. We've also created an event called Philadelphia Blue Day, which kind of goes to who we are as people, in the sense that in Philadelphia there was a tremendous amount of police officers who were killed in the line of duty over the past 2 years. And we wanted to do something for our friends at the Philadelphia Fraternal Order of Police, and we created a citywide benefit to generate funds for their survivors fund, which was almost depleted as a result of these tragedies. And the other part that we've done is partnered with all kinds of organizations that benefit the military, fire, and police, and donated Brave Spirits products to those different fundraisers to enable them to raise more money for their charitable causes. So we've done things called Rock the Troops. We've worked with Operation First Response for their for the wounded. And the foundation has made outright charitable contributions to Liberty, which is a division of the USO, the Wounded Warrior Project, the National Fallen Firefighter Foundation, and then some direct contributions to both the New Jersey and Philadelphia Fraternal Order of Police Survivors Fund. So we've been very excited to be able to make such a contribution back to the men and women who really put their lives on the line every day for us.
So then the number you're looking at the top is just sort of, that's just your number, your $2 donations. And then the other stuff you, I mean, I get the emails and the event listings and I post them on our website. And, but those kind of are a side project. I know you can get them from the events tab and such, right? From the website, but those, that you kind of do like behind the scenes as a continued effort.
Absolutely. We don't, the one thing that we don't do is we don't take credit for any of those fundraisers that folks are out doing independently. We just try to do our part in helping their fundraisers be more successful. And if that means donating Brave Spirits so that they can sell the drinks at the event and raise more funds, then that's great. But it's not something that we include in our donation ticker.
Right. And when I first, I mean, I think it was, I can't remember the first time I looked, maybe when I had got the products for review, it was at like 18,000. Now I think it's 47,000. So it's definitely going up.
Exactly. And, you know, one of our main focuses is to, you know, as Pal had mentioned earlier, is a way to say thank you. And we look at it as, you know, we want to honor and remember and celebrate the men and women who serve.
Now, do you get, and I've had this happen to my, but not necessarily, I guess, targeted towards me, like when I put out press releases saying, hey, Common Man Cocktails TV show or video shows got their first sponsors. I always had the people saying, oh, look, you're pushing alcohol, you're spreading poison, blah, blah, blah. Like, do you get any negative impact from people associating the donations with selling of alcohol?
You know, we have not. We get asked that same question frequently when we're working with other folks in the press of, have you had any pushback or negativity? And I think the reason why we haven't had a lot of critique or criticism is the way that we're approaching our product and our messaging. And that is, you know, we're not asking you to go out and drink more than what you normally would. We're asking you to substitute a brand that you're already purchasing. You know, instead of buying that particular brand that doesn't really do anything for the men and women who serve, choose ours. We are, you know, very respectful of responsible drinking. We want to make sure that folks are doing everything that they can to not get in trouble. But
right.
At the same time, men and women who serve, you know, like to have a drink just like everyone else. And so if there's a product out there that gives you a choice to say, not only am I going to have a drink that I enjoy, I'm going to give back to my community, and both financially and as a message that says thank you.
And there was a couple, I guess, not critiques per se, but people saying, well, look, it's you're only donating $2, but you're charging $20 for the bottle. Which to me goes into that brings the quality of the liquid into the equation, where you can find a bottle of rum for much more than $20, and definitely a bottle of gin. The vodka, obviously, because I mean, vodka is like it's the thing to have. You just got to have these fancy, crazy bottles and pay $27 for them. Has there anybody, when they sat down with the liquids, go, this isn't worth that type of money or anything in that direction? Or are they satisfied once they have it?
You know what? Our most common response that we get for our products, and I think some folks do come in with a little bit of an expectation that it might not be as good. But when we're out sampling events and having folks try our product, people love it. The response is that this is fantastic. This is excellent. We've had folks tell us that they would switch their brands immediately. And in fact, I think there's a little bit of a surprise, because our price point is reasonable and our charitable contribution is a significant amount. It's $2 per bottle, which is 10%. And that's paid by Brave Spirits. Our distributors and our retailers don't contribute with that. That's covered by Brave Spirits.
Okay, so yeah, and the end result. And you're in Pennsylvania. Is that a control state as well? I think so,
correct.
Right? Because we have that problem in New Hampshire too. You're currently, if I remember, you're shipping in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, specifically.
New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, and the District of Columbia.
Okay, so you're kind of creeping out and in every direction. Do you find there's any challenge to trying to with the control state? Do you have to supply the entire state, correct? Or can
Actually,
you supply
they,
certain
in
stores?
Pennsylvania, it's not necessarily the entire state. Out of their 600 plus stores, you can be in. We started in 20 out of the 600 stores. And you can be in any number of them. It doesn't need to be all the stores. So we're slowly creeping up on store count in PA as well. It's going to New Jersey, which is an open state. It's different business model, obviously, but it's door-to-door and labor-intensive in getting into all the places because you're knocking on the door of every liquor store that is there. So it's just a different set of challenges. But as Jen said, when people see what we're doing, we get the trial. But when they taste what we've produced, which is a great tasting whiskey, vodka, rum, and gin, kind of all four major food groups there,
right,
people buy the second bottle. And that's what's most gratifying for us. They see at that price point they're getting a very high quality product, which really compares favorably to products that are more expensive, in our opinion. On top of that, $2 is going back to charities that the purchaser presumably cares about. That's a phenomenal deal, and we usually end up with people saying, why would I drink anything else? There are different challenges in getting that word out effectively in a control state versus an open state. We're also distributed on military bases in that same footprint, which has its own unique set of challenges as well.
Oh, really?
Being a more secure community, it's not like you're just popping through the gates.
This is true.
And running events, but that community, the benefit is the community that we're talking about spends a lot of time together, and they're a very cohesive, self-aggregating group in their own individual military, fire, or police compartments, I guess. And the word of mouth has been phenomenal. The help that we've gotten from people in that community has been phenomenal in terms of opening up accounts, identifying other opportunities, whether it's distribution or financing as we grow, or employees that we've added to date. It's been really neat to see, and something I think is unique to what we're doing. I can't imagine people going out of their way to help brand X just because, hey, I really like the taste. It's I gotta like everything that you guys are about, and we get that.
Yeah, for me to really love a brand, I mean, I gotta like the story behind it. It doesn't necessarily have to be, for instance, a military or a donation story, but to me, there's a lot of different aspects that go with it. It's the company's direction, the design of their liquor, or what, you know, is it homemade? Does it have, you know, a good flavor to it? And then kind of, do you respect everything about that company? It's not just about the liquor. But then if it is, I mean, if I like the story and I like the brand and I like what it tastes like, then I don't really have a problem recommending it to a friend. Because then I feel like I'm not doing harm. I don't want to recommend something just because I think it has a cool bottle. Then they taste it. Now my reputation is damaged because, you know, they're like, this is awful. What were you doing? Which I don't. And I've tried, like with the rum, the difference between, not to call out too many brands, but like a Bacardi, for instance, for a light rum, this tends to be sweeter. It doesn't have that, the bite, I don't know what that bite is. It's just like rough, you know, non-refined. Right. And now, is the rum a molasses base, a sugarcane base?
The rum is a sugarcane based rum, which is why it has that sweeter taste and less of the bitterness that I think a molasses based rum has. And we get our sugarcane from the Florida Panhandle.
Okay.
And it's one of the only or very few rums that are made in the continental U.S. So this is not an island rum. It is Florida-based. And I think using the sugarcane we found that it's one of the few rums that we drank and that you can sip it straight.
Right.
As a white rum.
I don't know if this even makes sense. I don't know about that side of the aspect, but is there any type of supply constraints, considering you're limiting yourself to the U.S. when it comes to purchasing the sugarcane, or any way where somebody could try and gouge you for the price because they know you're not going to leave the U.S.?
A problem? We hope to get so big that that becomes a problem. You know, it's like I said, it's a challenging process, but it's rewarding all the same. And I think the one thing that we're happy to do is to demonstrate to consumers that, you know what, America puts out a pretty high quality product. You know, when we look at the glass, you know, our cardboard, the ingredients, to have such high quality ingredients that go into our product is tremendous. And to be able to say that it's all made in the United States is really, I think, exciting. But, you know, some of the challenges that, you know, there's parts of the bottle that aren't always historically made in the United States, like our the bottle top sealers. So that was a bit of a challenge to source, but we found good suppliers, and we think that we will. They are in a place to grow with us, which is even more exciting.
So you're not only are the liquids made, but every part of the actual bottle, the glass, the labeling, the cork top. I guess it's kind of a cork top. It's a cork with a plastic top on it.
Yes. Well, it's a synthetic cork since you can't make cork in the United States. So
that'll do it every time.
But yes, every component of our products is made in the United States.
How many employees do you have now? Like, is it still small?
Still small. We've got 3 full-time and 7 folks that are working for us part-time on the sales front.
Okay, so that sounds about what... the last interview with Riazul, they had this. This sounds very similar to their startup. They're 3 full time, and then they have. Well, in their case, they have people in Mexico too. They have 3 people in Mexico doing the distillery for tequila. But obviously, you don't have that problem. Now, the rum I've tasted, I was like, oh wow, that's different. I didn't expect it to be. I don't know. The thing I wanted to avoid was and I'm sure you guys feel the same, is that you don't want to be gimmicky. You don't want to be like, well, this is just, you know, a gimmick that we're trying to do here. You're serious about it, and the way I could tell it's serious is just mainly from the liquid quality. And with the rum, when I tasted it at first, I was a little skeptical. I'm like, I don't know, you know, if it's made in the U.S., call me like stereotypical, but I'm just like a rum in the U.S. can't be that good, right? I've had rum from New Hampshire and it's awful. So I was just like, oh, a little weary there.
Well, I think, Derek, we've also had the benefit of the master distiller that we've worked with is, first, he's an excellent craftsman, which has been terrific, but he's also a 14-year Army vet and has done two tours of duty in Iraq. And I think that that helped us come up with such a high-quality product is that we didn't want to be gimmicky. We wanted to make sure that this was that we put together a product that was absolutely worthy of the men and women who served. You know, and that's a pretty high standard if you're trying to craft a product that is made for people who are putting their lives on the line.
Right.
And so by having Ray Murdoch's insight and guidance in the crafting of our products, I think that's why they're so high quality, is that there's a lot of passion and energy that went into the recipes.
And overall, you guys didn't come into this, you know, without an idea of what you're getting into. You had people that have done this in the industry, like it was Diageo, is that what you said?
Dave, my husband, spent quite a bit of time working with companies such as Brown-Forman and Diageo.
And they're not small. I mean, Diageo is a pretty
small,
big company.
Yeah. And he worked on the product launch side of it. And I think he'll be the first to tell you that there's a big difference in launching a product that really doesn't have any reason to be on the store shelves other than it's just another facing,
right.
Versus one that, you know, has the craftsmanship and the energy around it, that there's big difference in feeling and approach and as we said, embracing of our market and our customers.
And with the gin, the other thing I noticed is it doesn't smell and taste like Pine Sol. Like for me, like a Tanqueray is way overwhelming. And one of the issues I find with approachability in gins is in its juniper berry attack. And you guys seem to have got like a good balance. Like is this considered an American London, an American dry, like a London dry made in America? I don't even know if that's a good classification, but it has like that, tastes like a good quality one.
I think when you look at all four products, Derek, really what we tried to accomplish was to make them not polarizing in their taste. And I think if you go back to what you were saying about the gin and some of the things that may turn people away a little bit, that's a pretty good, you know, the non-polarizing is a pretty good way to think about it, because as Jen said at the outset, what we did is we created products that gave somebody that chooses to drink a reason to choose our stuff. And we didn't want to be selling a flavor profile that is unique. What we wanted to do is give specifically the 32 million men and women in America that do or have worn the uniform a reason to try and adopt our products. And that non-polarizing flavor was one of the keys in the taste profile that we wanted to roll out. So, yeah, we wanted all four of them to be very approachable, to be very high quality, as we've discussed. You know, just a very good reason to be a substitute purchase for folks.
And I think one of the examples of that is definitely, you know, our gin. Is that gin is, I think, a tough drink for some folks.
Yeah.
I happen to be a gin drinker, so I like gin, but I'm like you, Derek. I don't like an overwhelming juniper flavor. I like a nice balance of the juniper and the citrus. And I also don't like the floral. So I would say that, you know, we are more of the American dry, which is what we found most gin drinkers in the United States prefer, and made it a little bit smoother and more approachable than I think the Pine Sol-esque gins.
Yes. And yeah, you're right. And I noticed that too. It's not as floral. Like this is kind of, I guess the closest would be like a Blue Coat or something, where you've got the citrus, the zest, and then you have the hints of juniper berries. But a lot of it you have to, I don't know, you almost have to pick it out, which I like better than picking a direction going, look, this is gin. Boom. Yeah, I know. I want to be able to say, okay, this is gin, but I taste this. And in back and forth with friends and be like, what are you getting out of it? And get different type of flavor profiles. And then All of a sudden you go, oh, yeah, that is in there. rather than coming straight out and being like, oh, look, we've got, you know, orange, here it is, it's going to make your eyes water, and we've got juniper berries, and then and you can't, in those type of drinks where they do that, I can't make them straight. I can't even do like a maybe a gin and tonic would be okay. You can usually water down a lot of stuff. But like if you did some sort of martini where you're going to have a big impact, where the gin's going to make a huge difference, you don't, at least I don't, and I don't think a lot of people want something that's just overwhelming, over the top.
Right.
And I think that fits more categories, a broader audience.
Yep. And I'll tell you, we're in the midst of gin and tonic season, and you know, a standing guard gin and tonic is a pretty smooth cocktail on a Friday evening.
I can see that. So, and now you have an infinite supply because you get to be right there. So, and I think I've gone through a couple bottles of the gin. I think I might have another one left. And then with the whiskey, I had mentioned this, and when you guys had sent it to me, there was a little note that says, we know you don't like whiskey, so we substituted it with vodka. I still have the original First Inn whiskey. And since my original, I haven't reviewed this one, I don't think officially yet, because of my, I didn't want to do it because of my aversions, but I have grown. Like I've decided, you know what? I'm not going to let my palate get in my way. I'm going to learn how to drink whiskey. So I'm now at the level where I think I could review the whiskey. And one of the things I noticed is it's not like a Kentucky bourbon, but it's got the sweetness. Mm-hmm. And I mean, did you have to find, I mean, do you have the same person building all the recipes and the distillation? I mean, are they that broad where they can do all these schools of alcohols, or do you have different people helping you along the way?
We have one master distiller that we're working with, and he has a pretty broad talent base, as you can tell by the quality of the products. And you know, when it came to the whiskey, again, as Pal had mentioned, we wanted to make sure that it tasted like your favorite whiskey, but better.
Right.
And one thing that we really wanted to do with our whiskey is to make sure that it was very smooth. We didn't want it to be kind of that big bite up at the front.
Right.
We wanted it to be a little bit smoother, which is where you get some of the sweetness, a little bit of the caramel flavor to it that I think smooths out some of the bourbon, because it is a bourbon-based whiskey, which is why you get that classic taste to it. But by doing a blend, really kind of rounds out the flavors. And what we found is that by doing that, it has the flavor profile of a much more expensive whiskey than what it is. You know, we're priced along the lines of a Jack Daniels, but it's a much smoother flavor profile than that. So I think, you know, in that respect, it's definitely outperforms the price.
Yeah, yeah. The Jack Daniels is a little harsh. Like I'm not there yet. That's I don't know what you need to like handle that. Maybe it's a special gene, but it's very overpowering. Where this, it's got the oaky creaminess to it, but it also has the sweeter attack. And I think again, if you're gonna make a product that's gonna fit a general audience, that's gonna, you know, expand the company, you don't want to just be in a 2% niche. You want to be able to say, look, if you've had whiskey, then this is going to be no problem for you.
Right. Well, and we've actually had a lot of Jack drinkers who are prepared for the big bite and the big mouthful really enjoy kind of the smoothness of the First Inn whiskey. You know, with the First Inn, it's comfortable, like we mentioned before, that it tastes very familiar, but it's different enough that it's appealing to a broad group.
Right. I could see, anybody who's used to, I mean, that's going to be even better for them, because they're expecting that attack, and to get nothing, they're like, well, what is this? Because maybe a lot of people haven't really moved away. They pick a brand that they might have found in college or whatever, and that's their brand. And you get that brand loyalty that's really for nothing, except for that's what they know. And you got to like pull them away and go, look, for something, here's something else. Just try it. And then because of the quality of the liquor, you can let it sell itself once they have it in their hands. And that goes to your word of mouth. Now, how have you How is the is there any specific product that's outshining the others, or is it kind of just equal?
Our products are really selling along the lines of the industry overall. You know, vodka is the leading seller for us and overall. And I think, you know, when you walk into your New Hampshire liquor store or Pennsylvania store here and you see the expanse of vodka, that bears it out. Whiskey is second, and then rum, and then gin in order. And, you know, we're within 1 or 2 percentage points of what the industry sees overall for those four spirits.
See, that's impressive, because the big issue I would see with vodka is just the sheer shelf space. Like, when I go in, there's like, you know, I have never seen anything. Tequila's growing in that direction, but overall, it's like vodka gets a whole wall, because there's just so many brands to compete with, and so many pretty labels and colors and flavorings and all the stuff. That is it. Do you find it a challenge to be able to face and be picked out of that big wall of options?
It is a challenge if we relied on you walking into the store and picking up our bottle and learning about it in the store. You know, that it would clearly be a challenge, and that's why our approach is very different, to pull demand through. And we spend a lot of time generating that demand by talking directly to the military, fire, and police community at a local level, state level, and even national level, which we do, even though our distribution is still right now in the Mid-Atlantic. You know, what that does, clearly, is it gets our story out, but it also gets a potential customer very well educated, so they're walking into a store asking for and even demanding our product, and, you know, making the store clerks search it out and find it, because that's what they're there to buy.
Right.
So, you know, you're right. It's you know, it's daunting when nobody knows about you, and you know, we're very proud of the look of our bottles, but, you know, no doubt there are a lot of other bottles in there. And as you mentioned, some of the biggest differentiators, you know, why does this cost $27 or $30 or $50? It's because of the glass that holds the liquid.
Right.
All of those are something where somebody could, you know, trump you. Somebody could always distill their vodka one more time than we do. Yeah, you'd be up to 22, and somebody will do 23.
And
somebody's bottle can be more expensive. But you walk into that vodka section, and no other product in there donates $2 from every bottle they sell to groups like Wounded Warrior and Homes for Our Troops and Police Survivors Fund and the National Fallen Firefighter Foundation. And we do it every day with every bottle.
And in your, the other way I noticed, like, you're getting the word out, for instance, is, although I hadn't originally contacted you through Twitter, you guys are social networking fiends, right? You're out, you got your Facebook fan pages, you got like Twitter accounts, and well, everybody's got a Twitter account, it seems. And so are you kind of finding any success in the social networking aspect of trying to draw people in, since you have that difference factor of the military and the donation systems? Does that help you kind of grab new eyes, even if they can't necessarily buy it yet, get them brand aware?
Yeah, absolutely it does. And they can buy it. We do have 7 merchants that sell over the internet. And
okay. Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. It's right on your website, too, this store.
That's right. You can link to them from www.bravespirits.com. And it's right on our homepage there. But you're right. The social networking, Facebook and Twitter specifically, have proven to be really great for reaching people in the military, fire, and police community and generating that word of mouth amongst that group, you know, not even just us broadcasting, but, you know, the people in that community talking about us. And, you know, we're on Twitter as Brave Spirits. We're on Facebook, same name as Brave Spirits. And in both those mediums, it's really neat to see people grabbing it. And kind of, as you'd said a few minutes ago, Derek, you know, giving folks a reason to care. You know, they like what the company's about. They can track the donations. You know, we had one guy specifically showed up as a fan of Brave Spirits on Facebook. And this was a few months ago. And you know, his profile picture was obviously a soldier. based in Florida. So I just sent him a note. Hey, how'd you find us? And it's a great story. He was on the Wounded Warrior website because Wounded Warrior had done some stuff to help one of his friends. Noticed the Brave Spirits was a supporter financially of Wounded Warrior. Went to our website, did a little more due diligence on us. And this is when we had just started on Facebook. We didn't even advertise it. He presumed that we would be on Facebook and went and found us there and then, you know, became a fan. That's an awful lot of steps for somebody to go through.
It's true.
And it's really, really gratifying to see that, you know, people can appreciate the sincerity of what we're doing and the sincerity of the thank you to, you know, guys just like that. And it's become a very, very effective tool, and in some respects more effective than the newsletter we send out via email every 3 weeks or so, because it, you know, the Twitter specifically gets picked up and bounced around by folks, and I guess people find 140 characters innocuous enough. I can't presume to explain why, but that seems to be the one that is the leader.
Yeah, and I mean that to go through that, that's right, to go through that many steps is pretty rare, because I find the only people who will do that are either internet celebrities will get that type of response, or video games. There's different niche markets that will garner that response. But what I've noticed, and the reason I kind of started my entire effort here, was that alcohol brands, especially smaller brands like you guys, and there's thousands of great brands out there that nobody knows about. They're not all distributed everywhere yet, and a lot of them you can buy online. But when I go as a normal guy, I walk into the liquor store and I see glasses everywhere, different colors and shapes and sizes with cool backgrounds on them where you can see things reflecting through them and floating things, guns, you know, glasses shaped like weapons. And you're like, well, what do I want? And you need to, there just doesn't seem to be enough outlets, and that's growing, for the alcohol brands in general to say, hey, this is our story and this is why you're going to like us. But you got to get that one-on-one, you know, building even a single person at a time, which is what I do, is I will contact people who friend me or fan me and say, check it out. This, you know, I appreciate, you know, just the appreciation makes them even bigger of a fan. And with the social networking aspect, by you sending an email to somebody saying, like, I'm so happy you guys joined us, not only do they like the brand, but now they feel like they've actually talked to you one-on-one, which I think makes the word of mouth even stronger.
Well, and I think that, I mean, what's nice about that is that that fits in with our approach from the very beginning, is that, you know, we're a company that wants to get to know who's buying our products, and we feel very strongly about supporting the folks who are buying our products. And to have that opportunity to develop one-on-one contact is terrific. Yes, it's tremendous for our brand, and it's terrific there, but it's also, you know, rewarding for Dave Powell and I, who've, you know, started the company and put a lot of heart and soul into it, to know that, you know, we've created a great product that's making a difference, and folks want to hear more about Brave Spirits.
It seems like you already had probably planned back in Hawaii what brand or what that you were going to go with: whiskey, vodka, gin, and rum. Hawaii is a great place for inspiration. I've been there; it's awesome. Do you guys foresee any other spirits that you can make in the U.S.? I know tequila is a challenge because you can't because of licensing. Or not even licensing, just laws. Is there any other spirits that you could see like going into?
Certainly spiced rum would be something that we could add.
Oh yeah, that'd be good.
Although for the foreseeable future, you know, we've got our hands full with the four brands that we have, and tequila is another one that's requested, but I mean, you kind of hit on it. We'd have to deviate from the 100% American made to do that.
Right.
And we've got enough for the moment. You know, there's four balls in the air with whiskey, vodka, rum, and gin.
It seems like most people at your stage are usually pushing a single brand, like a single thing. You know, in the case of tequila, it might be three because you got three different ages. But in vodka specifically, or in a rum, most brands, I guess rum, you could have three. You could do dark, light. But you don't normally see, let's say, gin, whiskey, and vodka. You wouldn't. those could be three separate companies, right? There's going to be a lot of work that goes into not only making a single brand like Brave Spirits, but then to say we've also got, you know, just not Brave Spirits. We got Addie's Rum, we got Standing Guard Gin, we got First in Whiskey, we got Valor Vodka, and be able to juggle all those and keep everybody focused on all four as individuals. Like, they're all your children, you got to love them equally. And that's going to be tough when you've got four of them.
Well, and I think that's one of the benefits, honestly, of having the Brave Spirits family of products, is that if someone has a special affinity for their brand, as you had mentioned earlier about their brand loyalty, they might have that for a whiskey, but may experiment more on the vodka side. And this allows us to, you know, speak to that person who likes to experiment with different brands, and they'll find that ours are very high quality, and they'll stick with us. And it is a lot of balls in the air, but at the same time, you know, all, you know, the Valor Vodka, First in Whiskey, Standing Guard Gin, and Addie's Rum are all in the Brave Spirits family. So it's, you know, we each one of those brands or flavors contributes the $2 per bottle to charities that support the men and women who serve.
Right. And so that what you, the only reason I had originally requested tequila is because if you had tequila, then you could do a Long Island iced tea with all just Brave Spirits products. Or close. You guys need a triple sec too, but I mean, that's not that bad. It's not that good either. But overall, what I'm excited to see though is that as you grow, because you're gonna, the more you grow, the more you're gonna end up donating, right? Because it's gonna be all about volume. That could
Absolutely.
Be a big number as you go.
And that's what we're shooting for, Derek. We're looking to have that contribution number grow as large as possible. I think that for the founders, that's a, you know, a fulfilling part of what we do, and a motivating factor too, is to be able to give away more money.
Excellent. I know you guys got to probably be heading out. We said we're going till 11. Do you guys have anything else you'd want to say while we're here with whoever might be listening, my audience? Like, is there, you know, a place or a specific, do you guys have any plans in the future, or do you know where you're going to be expanding to, or what your next challenges will be?
Yeah, we sure do. Right now, we're actually in the process of raising some more capital to grow, and there are a couple things that are significant about that. One is, you know, where are we going to grow? And the answer is, you know, south from Philadelphia, down through the Carolinas, Georgia, through Florida, and kind of around the Gulf Coast over to Texas, and, you know, then perhaps jump over to California from there in a second expansion. But what's exciting as well about, you know, what'll happen when Brave Spirits raises some additional capital is the amount of money that'll be generated for donations. It'll be, in our first year at full speed, after that, well north of $1 million that goes to charity. You know, even if our projections are way off, hey, it's $500,000 a year. I mean, we're confident it's more like a million plus. But that's an incredible amount of money. And, you know, there's a lot of good that's going to come of that, not just from the direct donations, but from the awareness it creates and the additional donations that can come from that awareness.
Right.
And so I would say look for us along the Atlantic coast, heading south, and around the Gulf Coast in the next 6 months or so.
Excellent. And then, of course, you can always go to bravespirits.com, find the shop, and then link to all the, go to the specific stores that carry you. I did check out a couple of them that do have it online. So the only trick there is if you can ship it from your home or to your home, which you could do in New Hampshire. We live here, die here. But I know you can't do that in Massachusetts and a couple other areas. So I guess the end result would be you want to ship it to your buddy's house outside of state and go pick it up.
Yeah, actually, if you check between the seven merchants, they all have a different list of states that they will ship to.
Oh, really?
So it may take a little bit of persistence, but I think, if I'm not mistaken, 49 of the 50 states are represented somewhere in there.
That's not too bad.
No, I think it's... Last count, that was most of them. It's something like $12 to $14 to ship four bottles. So it's not, not onerous.
No.
By any stretch. And, you know, it's not as ideal as us being on the store shelf around the corner from you to go grab it, but, you know, it's there in the interim.
Excellent. All right, guys. I appreciate you guys taking a little time. I know you got probably a busy schedule. You got four bottles of alcohol here to market and produce. I hope you guys continue success in raising money, having events. I see that eventually I will get to an event. Eventually. I get them and I'm like, I want to go there. I'm like, wow, that's like a 6-hour drive. But when I get down to the New York, Pennsylvania area, I'll definitely come check you out.
Well, at a minimum, you can put down the Army-Navy game this coming December. And hopefully it's sooner than that, but that's a great weekend in Philadelphia.
Excellent.
Thank you, Derek.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Take care.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.